Joining us now to analyze today's headlines is Robert Jensen. He's an author and a professor of journalism at the University of Texas at Austin. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Sonali.
Less than 3 weeks after a devastating magnitude 7.8 earthquake in Nepal that killed more than 8,000 people, another major earthquake was reported there this morning. Today's earthquake was measured at magnitude 7.3 and resulted in at least 42 deaths and more than 1,000 injuries in the poverty-stricken nation. Many houses that were damaged by the first quake collapsed during the second one. It was so powerful that it rippled through the northern Indian state of Bihar, where at least 16 people have died. Media are reporting the terror and panic that is striking people fearful of continued quakes. Meanwhile, satellite data suggests that the recent seismic activity has been so powerful that it caused the Himalayas, which are the tallest mountains in the world, to drop a few feet in height. Bob, do you think that international aid is flowing into Nepal right now as fast as it could?
Well, when we talk about aid, there's really an underlying moral question. One of them is, what do we owe to other people, no matter how far away they are? But the second is the question of, how did Nepal get to be poverty-stricken, which is a moral question about the relationship of the first world, especially Europe and its offshoots and the rest of the world. The question of aid requires a discussion of how much and how it's delivered, too. Do we have reasonable mechanisms for international agencies to deliver the aid? Or does this piecemeal combination of government and private charities really do it effectively? And of course, we can't talk about Nepal and talk about this question without talking about the effects of race. So in the United States, do we respond equally if the tragedy is in Kathmandu versus Paris? All of these are really quite profound moral questions that I don't think we're really ready to engage yet.
And U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is in Russia today for the first time in 2 years. Kerry will meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin and has already met with Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. Kerry and Lavrov together laid wreaths at the World War II Memorial, at a World War II Memorial in Sochi. U.S.-Russia relations are at a new low over the ongoing crisis in Ukraine. Among the issues that the officials plan to discuss the war in Syria, given Russia's overt support for Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, and the U.S. war on ISIS, the U.S.-Saudi war on Yemen, and Iran's increasing influence in the Gulf region. Russian support for separatist rebels in Ukraine will, of course, form a major part of the talks. The U.S. has been supporting Ukraine's military in that fight and also supported the coup in Ukraine last year that resulted in a new regime highly critical of Russia. Since then, more than 6,000 people have been killed in ongoing clashes and a low-level war. Coinciding with Kerry's visit, a report that was compiled by the Russian dissident Boris Nemtsov was published today, detailing that 220 Russian soldiers were killed in Ukraine. Nemtsov was assassinated in February. His work undermines Putin's claims that Russian soldiers have not crossed to the border with Ukraine. Well, Bob, how important are these talks? And does a face-to-face meeting between Kerry and Russian officials suggest that the U.S. and Russia might be willing to work things out?
Well, I hope it displays a concern. My first thought about reading today's news in Russia and U.S. relations was Europe more generally. The crisis in the Eurozone, the economic weakness of Europe, the recognition by Germany and other major players that there's got to be a deal between Russia and the West on these matters is probably propelling a lot of this. Whenever we talk about Russia and Ukraine, I think we have to remember that the United States loves to start this story at the point in which Russian support for Ukrainian separatists goes into the picture. I have no doubt that Putin's lying about the role of Russia in that, just like I have no doubt that the U.S. government often lies about its foreign policy. But the question is why? And of course, that takes us back to the U.S. decision to push NATO and push U.S. influence further and further to the Russian border. We might think about what would happen if Canada joined a Russian-led military alliance, for instance, and how we'd react. All of this is part of the mix, but I think the really dire situation in Europe is probably going to propel this forward, whether the U.S. and Russia really feel like making up or not.
Right. And finally, in a move that Putin might approve of, President Obama on Monday signed off on Shell Oil's permit to drill in Alaskan waters. The approval is apparently conditional, and the administration contends that the drilling will be highly regulated. The Chukchi Sea, where Shell wants to tap into a potential reserve of 15 billion barrels of oil, is one of the most treacherous places to drill. Offshore drilling is a dangerous undertaking, as the Deepwater Horizon rig disaster in the Gulf of Mexico illustrated. The potential for spill is high, and cleanup of spills is extremely difficult in the icy waters. Environmental groups denounced the approval of the permit. The Obama administration had already opened up offshore drilling in the Atlantic some months ago. Bob, does this move by Obama signal yet again that while he does give lip service to addressing climate change, ultimately he gives in to corporate agendas?
Yeah, I think this is an interesting story. One of the journalists writing about this said that perhaps Obama was balancing his support for weak environmental laws with this drilling. And that would be kind of like me balancing, let's say I'm going to be nice to you on the air, Sonali, so I want to balance that by beating you with a lead pipe when you leave the studio. I mean, it's insane. The United States' drive to exploit more and more fossil fuels is literally insane. First of all, there's the danger. That's well known. But more important is exploiting these fuels, of course, accelerates climate change dramatically. This is the problem of what increasingly more and more people are calling extreme energy, not just deep water drilling, but mountaintop coal removal, the tar sands, fracking. All of these are both extremely dangerous technologies, but more importantly, are bringing to bear now more fossil fuels on a world that can't burn anymore. It's a crazy decision.
Well, Bob, thanks as always for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Sonali.
Robert Jensen is an author and a professor of journalism at the University of Texas at Austin. This is Uprising. We'll be right back.